every dollar that is spent in resilience saves about $6 for these communities. So it's also a good economic investment. Also concerning is that the president has stopped authorizing the use of hazard mitigation grant program funding. This was funding that was given to communities who had just experienced disasters that allowed them to use a percentage of those funds to build resilience. So again, I don't really care. It doesn't really matter whether or not you believe in climate change. We can all agree that these storms are happening more frequently. The effects are becoming more severe. And whatever you want to call it, it's happening. And we need to acknowledge it and help these communities prepare.
And now you have FEMA being used, preparing to send $608 million to states to construct immigrant jails as part of the push to expand capacity for detainees. We just have 10 seconds. But FEMA's role in this, Jeremy.
Yeah, I think FEMA's mission is very clear, to help people before, during, and after disaster. And any single dollar that isn't being spent to help people with that mission is a failure to the American people. That money should not be going to build immigration detention centers. They should not be sending FEMA personnel, which they are doing, to help onboard new ICE agents.
We have to leave it there. Jeremy Edwards, former spokesperson for FEMA, among nearly 200 FEMA workers who signed a Katrina declaration to Congress. Thank you for joining us.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Hey, Mr. DJ, put a record on. I want to dance with my baby.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the first Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Portland has one of the most cutting-edge green stormwater systems in the United States.
8 people in the Tacoma, Washington Detention Center have gone on hunger strike so far this year.
And in national news, Trump attempts to seize control of the Amtrak station in Washington, D.C.
Good evening. This is a KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 27th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to encourage you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Danny Shy. Lori Chavez DeRemer, former Oregon congressperson and current federal labor secretary, told President Trump, quote, "Thank you for what you're doing with your agents on ICE. I hope you will come to Portland, Oregon, and crack down," end quote. Federal immigration authorities have been operating in Portland for years. Trump has threatened to place federal law enforcement in several Democratic-controlled cities due to alleged increased crime. During the first 6 months of 2025, violent crime in Portland fell 17% compared to last year. Homicides dropped from 35 to 17, a 51% drop. Referring to Chavez DeRemer's remarks, Senator Ron Wyden said, quote, "It's bad enough to flatter the boss as a requirement for employment, but it's even worse to sell out your fellow Oregonians along the way."
Portland has built one of the most extensive green stormwater infrastructures in the country. Thousands of rain gardens and green streets help keep sewage out of the Willamette and Columbia rivers. Rain gardens are dips in gardens and yards that are meant to collect excess water and bring it back into the soil. Green streets absorb stormwater runoff from sidewalks and streets. This protects the sewer systems from getting overwhelmed when heavy rain occurs. Both of these city infrastructure tools are what many people call bioswales. They act as a way of putting excess water back into the ground and through natural filtration systems. A new study released about this, the last 30 years of green stormwater infrastructure in Portland, shows that the city has been largely successful in its goals to using low-impact city planning tools to protect the surrounding bodies of water. The study also shows plans to expand the GSI as concerns grow around the city's ability to respond to climate change and aging infrastructure. Interested Portlanders can read the whole study at mdpi.org.
Immigrants' rights groups said overcrowded and abusive conditions inside the Northwest Detention Center have led to 8 detainees resorting to hunger strikes so far this year. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Immigrants' rights groups say overcrowded and abusive conditions inside the Northwest Detention Center have led to 8 detainees resorting to hunger strikes so far this year. After receiving more than 700 complaints from detainees about unsanitary conditions and medical neglect and being denied entry to inspect the facility, the Washington State Department of Health sued the GEO Group, which operates the center, last year. Rufina Reyes of La Resistencia says detainee Victor Manuel Arces has been held for a year and wants to be deported back to Peru, but officials won't allow it. So he has been refusing to eat in protest. Here is Reyes speaking through a translator.
He told us, it's okay if I die because I'm already dying alive. I need to be free. I'm sick. I cannot handle all of this. I cannot handle another transfer to another detention center. I want to go directly to my country.
House Bill 1232, which passed this session, expands state oversight over private detention facilities, allowing for unannounced inspections by the Department of Health and creating penalties for noncompliance. Reyes says detainees face overcrowding in the center, with 2,000 people imprisoned in a space meant for about 1,500. She calls the conditions abusive, saying detainees are served spoiled food and undrinkable water. She encourages lawmakers to visit the center, but her view is that the facility is beyond the point of repair.
We want them to sure go in, inspect the place, but not to make it better, but to be able to make the argument that it should be shut down because this place should not exist.
GEO Group is one of the largest for-profit prison operators in the world. Amid the Trump administration's push to increase immigration arrests and detentions, the company has reported $1.25 billion in profits for the first half of the year, a significant increase from last year. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
According to the Consumer Price Index, the price of food has increased by 3% in the last 12 months. The price of meats, poultry, fish, and eggs have risen by almost 6%. According to a study released by the USDA, on average, U.S. food costs have risen by over 23% since 2020. Doug McMillan, CEO of the nation's largest grocery chain, Walmart, said, quote, "We've continued to see our costs increase each week, which we expect will continue into the third and fourth quarters," end quote. Gary Millerchip, Costco's chief financial officer, said in May that the company, quote, "saw inflation as a result of tariffs because we import certain fresh items from Central and South America," end quote. A poll published this month by the Associated Press said that 90% of Americans considered the cost of groceries a source of stress, with over 50% describing it as a major source of stress.
Democratic-led cities vow to fight National Guard troop deployments. With that story and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
What President Trump is doing is unprecedented and unwarranted. It is illegal. It is unconstitutional. It is un-American.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says there's no emergency in Chicago that calls for an armed military intervention. President Donald Trump says he might send National Guard troops to the third largest U.S. city as part of his federal crackdown on crime. Chicago officials say, like Washington, D.C., they're being targeted for their diversity and left-leaning policies, noting that 8 of the 10 states with the highest homicide rates are led by Republicans. A Utah district judge has ruled state Republicans ignored a voter-approved ballot initiative banning partisan gerrymanders and must redraw the state's congressional map. Salt Lake City resident and lead plaintiff Victoria Reed called it an important day for democracy.
This is an incredible win for the voters of Utah, and I think it will make a difference long term in terms of what kind of people we are able to have represent us.
The legislators argue they have the authority to modify citizen ballot measures and say they'll consider appealing to the state Supreme Court. Indiana lawmakers met with White House officials amid a growing push to redraw their state's maps. The GOP already holds a state House supermajority and 7 of 9 congressional seats. Republican State Representative Jim Lucas says he's reluctant to get into a national gerrymandering arms race.
We have a lot of great things going on without having to allow ourselves to be distracted by something, in my mind, as just dumb as hell like this.
Texas has already approved new maps after Trump said he'd like 5 more GOP House seats. California voters will decide this fall whether to redraw the state's maps to nullify what Texas does. In Florida, Republicans have formed a legislative committee for a possible mid-cycle map change. A federal judge has rejected a Trump administration move to end protections for children at migrant detention centers, ensuring medical care, education, and play. Attorney Daniel Hatoum with the Texas Civil Rights Project says even with the protections, children are being held in unsafe conditions.
Terrible food, to the point where food is rotten. Not sufficient amount of formula for young children who really need it. Remember, some of these children are as young as 1 year old.
The White House argues the standards create a magnet for illegal migration. Trump says he wants to fire Lisa Cook from the Federal Reserve, claiming she engaged in mortgage fraud, although she hasn't been charged with a crime. Cook says she'll sue to keep her job. The president has repeatedly attacked the central bank and its chair for refusing to lower interest rates. And Trump says he'll reinstate the death penalty for murder cases in Washington, D.C., a policy he says he'd like to see expanded nationwide. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden's latest article. At 6, it's The Underground. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be warm with a high of 87 and a low of 62. And tomorrow will be warm and sunny with a high of 89 and a low of 60. Today, August 27th in 1963, over 250,000 people prepared to march on Washington and demonstrate the following day on August 28th, 1963, in what would be one of the most memorable marches of the civil rights movement. The quote of the day is from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He said, quote, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." End quote.
Alaska Native organizations are concerned about federal contract cuts. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The federal government is in the process of rewriting the rules for how it issues federal contracts, which has some Alaska Native organizations concerned. Ayolna Niden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Christopher Slotty is an attorney who works with Alaska Native villages, regional corporations, and tribal governments. He was previously a vice president of the Old Harbor Native Corporation. Slotty says that over the years, more and more Native corporations have turned to federal contracts for revenue, which then gets paid out to shareholders. But he says this could change.
If there is a reduction in federal contracting dollars available to Alaska Native corporations, or they don't have as much success in that arena, they would reduce in size, at least on a revenue basis, which could have an impact on dividends.
The concern is that the federal government is currently rewriting its rules for awarding contracts. That's a result of an executive order President Trump signed in April. It directs the government to remove unnecessary contracting rules that are not required by statute. In 2021, Alaska Native corporations received more than $11 billion from federal contract revenue, according to data from the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. Slotty says that in part, ANC's participation in federal contracts has grown because Congress gave tribes and corporations easier access to the U.S. Small Business Administration programs.
It provides a little bit more level playing field for ANCs to compete for work. They don't have to compete with like Boeing or Northrop Grumman, right? These really massive multinational companies.
One worry Alaska Native contractors have is that the government might remove something called the Rule of Two. It directs government agencies to set aside projects to small businesses if two or more small businesses are able to do them. Slotty says that eliminating the rule could make it difficult for small businesses, including Native contractors, to compete for the work. I am Alena Naiden.
The sci-fi comedy series Resident Alien has ended its fourth and final season, leaving First Nations actor Gary Farmer weighing his next opportunity. Brian Bull, senior reporter for Buffalo's Fire, caught up with Farmer recently in Albuquerque.
Resident Alien not only features the titular extraterrestrial running amok in Colorado, but also several members of the Ute tribe, including Dam 12 Trees. Farmer plays the tribal elder and diner owner, who's the adoptive father to Asta 12 Trees. When not wrestling with alien mayhem, the story often turns to happenings with the native community. In the sixth episode of the fourth season, Harry the Alien observes his first powwow and is consumed with the music and sense of community.
Now, come on. How do you feel?
I feel like you keep hitting me, but I also feel like I'm connected to everything. It's like Wi-Fi.
Farmer says Resident Alien made Native people a part of the story without relegating them to stereotypes or background dressing. Overall, it was a special experience.
It was a real family. I mean, you have a showrunner like Christopher Sheridan. He's a human being, and you can see it in the show. There's not a lot of human beings out there in my business. They got other interests, mostly financial.
Farmer says there's talk of a possible feature film that'll continue the Resident Alien story. But in the meantime, he's playing gigs on the road with his band, Gary and the Troublemakers. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Albuquerque.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In the ongoing case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, Judge Paula Zenis has strictly forbidden the government from deporting him out of the United States. On Tuesday, Judge Zenis ruled against the Trump administration's attempts to deport Abrego Garcia, a man who was wrongfully detained back in March. He was released last Friday but taken back into custody by ICE on Monday, just 60 seconds after arriving for an immigration check-in. This incident follows his previous wrongful deportation to El Salvador, from which he was returned to the United States after months spent in the notorious CECOT detention center. Abrego Garcia's lawyers filed a lawsuit the same day to halt his deportation, requesting that he not be removed from the country until he is granted a fair trial. Judge Zenis issued a stay on Garcia's deportation after further review. On Monday, one of his attorneys, Simon Sandoval Moschenberg, spoke with NBC News, stating, quote, "There was no need to take him into ICE detention. The only reason they took him into detention was to punish him for using his constitutional right to speak up and fight proceedings," end quote. Judge Zenis ruled that Abrego Garcia would remain in ICE custody until she could hold an evidentiary hearing on the case. She questioned the government about whether Abrego Garcia would be safe if deported to Uganda, given his lack of connections to the country and the government's intentions to deport him there. Judge Zanis emphasized that it is, quote, absolutely forbidden to remove Kilmar Abrego Garcia from the country as long as all court orders stand. Sandoval Moschenberg requested that his client be held within a 200-mile radius of the court to ensure timely access to legal proceedings. Judge Zanis, who is overseeing Abrego Garcia's lawsuit against the Trump administration for his wrongful deportations, has given both sides a week to provide briefs for a possible hearing.
Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy announced today that the U.S. government is taking over management of Union Station, the main transportation hub in Washington, D.C. Seizing control from Amtrak appears to be another example of how the federal government is expanding unwelcome influence in the United States Capitol. Duffy made the announcement and then joined Amtrak President Roger Harris at Union Station for the launch of Next Gen Acela Rail. Next Gen Acela, the rail service, new high-speed train. The secretary said Union Station, located within walking distance of the U.S. Capitol building, had fallen into disrepair. Next, it should be a point of pride for the city. Trump said last week he wants $200 billion from Congress to, quote, beautify Washington. He has already sent thousands of National Guard troops and federal law enforcement officials into Washington to fight a fabricated violence crime wave. Local police statistics show violent crime in Washington has declined in recent years, but Trump has countered, without offering evidence, that those numbers were false. National Guard troops have been on patrol inside and outside of Union Station after Trump launched his anti-crime effort earlier this month. Vice President J.D. Vance and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth were both shouted down by opponents of the intervention when they visited with troops last week.
Today, in 1921, the meatpackaging plants form a football team. Rick Smith has more with Labor History in Two.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1921. That was the day that the Green Bay Packers football team received a charter from the American Professional Football Association. A year later, this would become the National Football League. The Green Bay Club had started up 2 years earlier. Its original sponsor was the Indian Packing Company in Green Bay, Wisconsin. They packaged canned meat. Meat packaging was a major industry in the Midwest during this era. Packing plants in Chicago, Kansas City, Iowa, and Wisconsin processed the cattle and pigs raised in the West as meat to feed the nation. Curly Lambeau was a shipping clerk for the company. He helped to organize a group of local players into a football team. Curly persuaded his boss to donate money for the uniforms, and it was there that the name Packers was born. When the Indian Packing Company fell on hard times, they were bought out by Acme, another packing company based in Chicago. So, for a brief moment, the Green Bay Packers, one of the staunchest rivals of the Chicago Bears, was actually owned by a Chicago company. Although Acme only owned the team for 1 year, the team nickname stuck. Lambeau was able to buy the team back. He went on to become the Packers' coach, leading them to 6 championships. The Green Bay Packers are not the only American sports franchise that's name harkens back to a particular kind of labor. Another Wisconsin team, the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team, is a reference to that city's proud beer brewing tradition. In Big Ten sports, the Purdue Boilermakers and Nebraska Cornhuskers take to the gridiron each week with names that reflect the working traditions of the cities where the teams play ball.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society.
Free house calls help Californian residents save money on their utility bills. As part of a workforce development program, young people are visiting neighbors to assess their water and energy efficiency. Dr. Anthony Lizowith has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. An organization in California is preparing young people for careers in clean energy. And in the process, these young people help their neighbors save money on their utility bills. Each summer, the Rising Sun Center for Opportunity, a workforce development group, hires young people in San Joaquin and the Bay Area to visit nearby homes and assess their water and energy efficiency. Senior Program Manager Sofia Canela Torres says the center does not charge residents for these so-called green house calls.
We use this no-cost service that we provide to the community as a vehicle to provide the youth earn and learn experience and career exposure.
Trainees also help some residents install new efficient appliances like low-flow shower heads and LED lights and offer tips for saving energy and water. Then, after 6 weeks of making green house calls, trainees are placed with a company working on energy issues for more hands-on, paid experience.
For them to see, you know, what could it look like for me to be part of an organization like this?
Canela Torres says this program helps young people build clean energy careers and learn how they might use those careers to give back to their community. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
A landmark legal victory for young climate activists in Montana is sparking hope for a greener future. Mandy Stapleford has more with Good News, Good Planet.
Good news, good planet, good news.
It's time now for your good news for a good planet. Climate Kids. A landmark legal victory for young climate activists in Montana is sparking hope for a greener future. Montana is one of several states that enshrines the right to a clean environment in their constitution. In August of 2023, a group of 16 young environmental activists, ranging in ages from 5 to 22, argued in court that this included the right to a stable climate. In a first-of-its-kind ruling, a state court affirmed that Montana's fossil fuel policies violate the constitutional rights of its youngest citizens to a clean and healthy environment. Judge Kathy Seely of the First Judicial District Court in Montana declared that the state must now factor in climate impacts when permitting fossil fuel projects. This groundbreaking ruling not only vindicates the young plaintiffs' demands, but also sets a powerful precedent for climate litigation across the nation. The impact of this decision is profound. By recognizing the unique vulnerability of youth to climate change, the court has empowered a generation to demand accountability from their leaders. This case is providing momentum for similar cases across the country. For these climate kids, this legal win offers the hope that other young voices will also be heard and have the power to shape a more sustainable future for us all. And this is Mandy from GoodNewsGoodPlanet.com.
Dan is too worried to look innocent. Dan Raphael has more with Poetic Justice.
The hottest week in the year is usually August, but 1 week doesn't normalize. Yeah, Donnie brings out some new outrage every week or so to recapture the spotlight, but real news takes time, like Ukraine, Gaza, inflation, climate collapse, shifting from democracy to autocracy. Masha Gessen, who was in Russia when its fledgling democracy got taken over by Putin, says the biggest difference in what Trump is doing now is that it's happening much faster. How many Democrats in Texas will find out next year they're not in any congressional district at all? What if Trump commands the post office to not deliver any ballots? It's easier to worry about the weather, keeping a stable living situation. How high will prices get? Will I be able to distinguish a militant goth from federal enforcement wandering the streets? The feds in D.C. arrested a guy for having a drink in his parked door-open van. Tell me you haven't done anything illegal in the last 3 days. The traffic flow on most Portland streets is 10 miles above the limit. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're not being watched. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is James Kemp, Josh Salem, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is the wonderful Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Catherine Carley, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. I am your interim evening news director, Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath, on 104.3 FM and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Danny Shy. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I'm joined by street reporter Jeremiah Hayden to talk about his recent article, Grants Passed to Provide Basic Relief for Homeless Residents Following Legal Settlement. The city won a Supreme Court case allowing cities to punish homeless people. And an Oregon law says cities must act reasonably, despite federal provocations. Hi, Jeremiah. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So first off, will you give me a little background about Grants Pass versus Johnson, which is the lawsuit that Grants Pass won that set sort of a national precedent for how cities enforce homeless ordinances?